This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the emergence of a new variant, the Omicron variant of the coronavirus, has naturally raised serious concerns about public health. And indeed, there is evidence that it's spread now across the world, not yet as we speak in Ireland, but certain to be in Ireland, but not yet discovered in Ireland. The emergence of this variant and the possibility that it may be much more transmissible has caused concerns, indeed, fears perhaps for public health, but for business and for people in hospitality, travel, industries, in retail, with coffee shops, restaurants, bars, clothes, bookshops. It's causing real fear now. After we're almost 2 years into this, 21 months, and people are despairing. I was very taken by an interview on the Tonight Show on Virgin Media by an account given by restaurateur Gina Murphy, who owns a restaurant in Merrion Row, Hugo's. It was a very sober account of the difficulties her business is experiencing and what consequences would lie ahead for people in these businesses if, as the UK, for example, are indicating, the restrictions may stay in place until March. To discuss this, I'm joined now by one of our leading economists, Jim Power. Jim, the emergence of this Omicron variant is naturally a matter of concern for public health, but for people in those businesses who have endured so much, people who are working in hospitality, working as food producers, working in retail, this must surely be, people who are working in it and owners, this must surely be a real question, not of concern, but of fear.
Yes, Eamon, it is a real cause of concern because since March 2020, we've obviously been subjected to varying levels of restriction. But during 2021, there was certainly a sense that as the vaccine program was rolled out, that there was going to be a lot more hope. And I think there was a sense that for retail and particularly for the hospitality sector, that Christmas 2021 was going to be a very good one. And we saw, you know, a massive level of bookings made over the last few months for the month of December, basically. Yes. And since the chief medical officer came out a few weeks ago, you know, warning people to be very careful about socializing and so on. We had Killian de Gascon in the last couple of days saying that this won't be and shouldn't be a traditional Irish Christmas, that we can't afford to make the mistakes we made last year, and that people going to pubs and restaurants before Christmas and intergenerational mixing over the Christmas period would be a disaster. And we then had we've had over the last couple of weeks the latest level of restriction imposed, you know, pubs and restaurants and so on closing at 12 o'clock at night. And the result of all of that is that we have seen a massive level of cancellation of big parties over the last couple of weeks. And these cancellations are not necessarily due to the restrictions, but there's a sort of a fear out there now of congregating with other people in closed spaces. So for the hospitality sector, this is an absolute disaster because if they don't make money in December, well, then they're not going to make money over the remainder of the year because of the following year, because December yes. is when the bulk of profits are actually earned within that sector. December is now going to be a write-off. And many of those businesses that were hanging on in the hope that they would have a normal, good Christmas are now, as Gina Murphy indicates, they are in the depths of despair. And there's only one possible thing that can save those businesses now, and that is a significant level of support from government. Again, you know, the EWSS needs to be reintroduced at a high level, because if it's not, those businesses are being undermined by public health issues. They are being forced to curtail their business in the interests of the health of the nation. So they do need to be compensated proportionally for that. And if they are not, those businesses will disappear over the coming months.
Yes.
And then you think about, and I suppose we've been arguing this for the last 18 months, but if we ever return to a sense of normality, to rebuild the Irish tourism product, to rebuild our towns, villages, and particularly our city centres, we will need all those businesses to be around. And with these restrictions in place, and if they remain in place until February or March, well, then, you know, it's going to be an absolute disaster, and we will end up with serious damage done to large segments of the economy, particularly the hospitality sector, but also non-essential retail. And even if you go through Dublin city centre at the moment, you know, restaurants, coffee shops are very quiet. They were quiet anyway because so many people were working from home, but that has obviously been exacerbated over the last couple of weeks by the renewed health concerns. So it's a pretty damning prospect for many of those businesses at the moment. And I dread to think now about the longer term impact it's going to have on the integrity of our city centres, particularly Dublin city centre.
Yes, I was very struck by Gina Murphy's sober tone. She was talking about sustainability, survival, really. She was talking very intelligently, very soberly about, for example, the pandemic unemployment payment of €350. She made the point that some of her staff are earning considerably more than that, and this is really not enough. She says, she's speculating, that these people won't want to work in the restaurant business anymore and that some have left. Also, she pointed to the people, the food producers, the butcher who brings her meat, the wine retail, wholesaler rather, who brings the wine and vegetables and all of that. All of these people are being severely damaged and have been now over a long period of time, 21 months and counting. And she says that her industry is threatened now by people just saying, I'm not staying there, I have to do something else. When things open up again, as they have done recently, you can't find staff.
Yes, it's a crisis situation. There's no doubt about that. And I think we're all aware in this country, but it's not unique to this country. It's an issue in the United States, for example, in the United Kingdom at the moment. Many businesses are finding it absolutely impossible to hire sufficient staff. One of my local restaurants here in Dublin, they normally do a Friday, Saturday night dinner. They're not opening at the moment because they can't get chefs.
Yes.
So there's a serious, serious crisis in the industry that has been obviously driven by the impact of COVID over the last couple of years. But there has been definitely a mass resignation from the sector, and it's going to be really difficult to get people back into the sector to work again, because working in a restaurant is a tough life. You know, the hours are very unsociable. It's a highly pressurized environment. And some people would turn around and argue sort of cynically, well, if the restaurants want to be able to hire staff, they need to pay them properly. But of course, if wage rates within the restaurant sector increase significantly, which we'd all love to see, but the side effect of that, well, the direct effect of that is that the price of the meals that we enjoy will go up substantially. So if we believe that people in the restaurant sector need to be paid more, well, then we as consumers of those products need to be prepared to pay more as well.
Equals or that causes inflation.
Of course it does. Absolutely. You know, that is the sort of classic cost push inflation. You know, wages rise, the price of the goods and services sold by the business then have to rise, and in turn that pushes further upward pressure on wages. So you get this sort of wage price spiral, which is what central bankers around the world are really concerned about at the moment. So there is no easy answer for the restaurant sector, the hospitality sector at the moment. Even if, you know, Omicron turns out to be a lot less serious than some people are currently suggesting, and that if we come into the new year and things settle down in a normal way very quickly, the same issues are going to be there. You know, restaurants will still find it incredibly difficult to hire staff, and we will increasingly see, you know, restaurants opening much more limited hours. The quality of the service for the consumer will deteriorate. So it's a huge, huge issue. And it is a crisis situation for the hospitality sector. And let's face it, the hospitality sector is an integral part of our tourism product. It is an integral part of the vibrancy and life of towns and cities around the country. And it's a sector in deep crisis at the moment. And government really needs to look at what it has to do to make sure that those businesses survive, that they are sustainable, and that they do contribute to the recovery in those sectors of the economy most adversely affected, particularly tourism, by COVID-19. And of course, you mentioned there, you know, when a restaurant is in trouble, when it's not trading properly, obviously the owners of the restaurants suffer, the staff in the restaurants suffer, all of the suppliers to that restaurant suffer, be it wine, be it the various food products, etc. Yes. They all suffer down the chain. And of course, the other point is that, you know, when people come into Dublin City Centre, for example, to dine, the chances are they will go into other establishments and spread their business about the place.
Yes.
So if those sort of flows of people in start to cease because we basically don't have a hospitality sector, well, then the whole economy is going to suffer. So we really, really do need to take a strategic approach to try and address these problems in the hospitality sector. Otherwise, we will not have one. And the good thing in a way is that one of the big surprises, Eamon, over the last couple of years has been the extreme buoyancy of tax revenues.
Yes.
In fact, they've surpassed all expectations on the upside. That's good news because it means that despite the high levels of debt we have run up as a country during COVID-19, the public finances are still relatively healthy, and there is scope for the government actually to step in and to spend money to support these businesses. And if the government does not do that, well, then those businesses will disappear. And in fact, you know, one of the nails has been hammered into the coffin over these weeks in the run-up to Christmas, another nail. And we really need to think about it.
Now, yeah, for example, a bookshop in town or a clothes shop in town, a bar, a pub, all of those are collateral damage to this pandemic. And the question is this, really. How close are we, in your view, Jim, to damage that is unfixable when and if this pandemic ceases to be a public health problem?
Yeah, there has been a sense all along that many businesses were just prepared to hang in there with the support of the employee wage subsidy scheme and also the pandemic unemployment payment and other financial incentives that were put in place. And a lot of businesses held on in the expectation and the hope, particularly that the vaccine program would return a sense of normality. But the longer this goes on, this sort of transitory period, if you want to call it that, which is being used in another context at the moment in relation to inflation, but this so-called transitory period of difficulty for the hospitality sector, the longer that goes on, the more likely it is that it will have disastrous consequences. And I would sort of feel that if things do not improve for the month of December, which they're unlikely to do at this juncture, well, then many of those business owners will basically take a decision early in the new year. This just isn't worth it anymore. And they will get out of the business. And it is interesting, I guess, to think about the approach of other countries to COVID over the last 18 or 24 months, indeed nearly at this stage. Ireland has been subject to amongst the most stringent sets of restrictions than any other country in the world. And Boris across the water has been roundly criticised and continues to be on his approach to COVID-19. He's definitely had a much more laissez-faire approach to it. Other countries, you know, you look at Sweden, which has had a very relaxed attitude. You look at Denmark, which in recent times particularly has had a very relaxed attitude. So we see varying levels of restriction. And Ireland, the whole time, has been subject to amongst the most stringent conditions. And yet, here we are. At this juncture, significant damage has been done to many businesses in the economy over the last 18 months, particularly in the hospitality and retail sectors. And our hospital system is now in serious crisis again with ICU numbers and hospitalization numbers. So you just ask yourself the question, has the approach of the Irish government, the significant level of restrictions in place, has that actually turned out any better than those countries that adopted a more relaxed approach to it? And the answer at this juncture, and things can change very quickly in relation to COVID, as we know. But the answer at this juncture would appear to be that Ireland has not fared any better in terms of COVID outcomes, but the impact on sectors of the economy has been much more severe than in other countries. So I think you can seriously question the approach of the Irish authorities. I think a lot of it has been very ham-fisted. For example, at the moment, we have Ireland imposing from Friday morning significant travel restrictions into the country, particularly from the United Kingdom. And on the other side of the equation, the United Kingdom is taking its common travel area obligations, you know, seriously, because it is not imposing restrictions on Irish travellers into the UK, but we are not reciprocating in that regard. I think the approach of the Irish government actually is just so ham-fisted at this stage. It strikes me that in some respects, they haven't a clue what they're doing. 4 or 5 weeks ago, we were being lauded as one of the countries that handled COVID in one of the best ways possible in the world over the 18 months. And then within 3 weeks, we were back in a crisis situation, you know, bottom of the league table in many respects. You look at what's happening at the moment in relation to the school situation, whether kids should or should not wear masks, all of that issue. You look at the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, stating the other day that the pantomimes can go ahead, but that children shouldn't go to those pantomimes. I mean, it's a good idea. Absolutely. It's a totally bizarre situation. And I really would question, personally, I have lost all confidence in the ability of the government to actually handle this situation properly.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Now, one benefit and one priority is protecting the health service. And protecting the health service workers, Jim, who after 21 months are weary, tired, demoralized, I would imagine, and superbly committed. But there are thousands of them now who are out through being close contacts or indeed contracting the virus. That has to be the number one priority, many people believe. And so far, we've managed after a fashion. But we don't really have an option when it comes to protecting the health service, the workers in that sector. They are our most important priority, it seems, and rightly so. I just make that observation because of the possibility that the Omicron variant may be, and it's not understood fully for another couple of weeks how transmissible it is, but it may be much more transmissible than the Delta variant because there are more mutations in it. But let's move on to a very interesting appearance before the Senate Banking Committee in Washington yesterday. Jerome Powell is the chair of the Federal Reserve. He is the most powerful figure in the administration in terms of the economy. He can set interest rates. He can raise interest rates, or at least he can argue for that. He warned about inflation. He said to the Senate Banking Committee, we've been talking about inflation up to 5 or 6% in the United States as being transitory. He said, I think we should retire the word transitory for the moment. Now, that's a real fear as well, isn't it, for all of us?
It is, Eamon. The reality is that central bankers, economists, and everybody else really have not a clue what inflation is going to do over the next 12 months. That is the honest answer to the question. Central bankers have been arguing over recent months that these inflationary pressures are transitory, that we're getting a sort of a classic demand supply crisis because of COVID, because, you know, during the COVID crisis, demand was obviously significantly repressed to varying degrees in different countries due to COVID restrictions. On the supply side of the equation, a lot of production was taken out during the COVID restriction period. And then when we start to reopen economies, when we start to lift the restrictions to varying degrees in different countries, you are met with repressed demand surging back into the system, coming up against very limited supply. And when you get that sort of a demand supply imbalance,
yes,
prices are going to go in one direction. And we're seeing, you know, huge unexpected eventualities flow from that. Shipping industry and the availability and cost of shipping containers around the world is in serious crisis at the moment, and the price of those containers have increased 10 to 15 fold in some cases. And of course, the reality is that a lot of the stuff we consume is shipped. And if the cost of containers rises, well, obviously the cost of the products in those containers will have to rise proportionately. And we're seeing that. We've also seen a huge energy crisis, oil prices, which collapsed in the aftermath of the initial COVID-19 crisis. Oil prices collapsed back in the second quarter of 2020. They have subsequently rebounded very strongly for a variety of reasons, not least the whole environmental agenda. And we're now seeing, for example, in this country, home heating oil prices have increased by over 70% in the last 12 months. Diesel and petrol prices up about 25%. And indeed, in the United States, energy cost inflation is running in the mid-20s at the moment. So there's a lot of stuff happening. And of course, the issue we mentioned earlier, significant labor shortages in some sectors, putting upward pressure on wages. So there's a lot happening on the inflation front at the moment. And as a consequence, central bankers and economists, as I say, are totally confused as to how this is going to play out. The hope would be, and indeed the expectation is that, you know, once we come into the spring and early summer of next year, that energy prices will fall back significantly. So that will have a positive impact on the inflation outlook. Also, there is a hope and an expectation that a lot of these supply chain bottlenecks that are currently creating such scarcity in the supply chain and upward pressure on prices will start to ease themselves out. And that, you know, as those sort of unexpected and unusual impacts of COVID-19 start to feed through the system, well, then, you know, prices will start to settle down again. But there's a couple of questions that we really need to ask and don't know the answer to at the moment. Number one is, even if consumer price inflation levels off, does that mean prices will adjust at a higher level? In other words, will all of the price increases we've seen in the last 12 months actually start to reverse themselves? With the exception of energy, it's unlikely that prices will fall in other parts. So, in other words, this inflation starts to become embedded in the system. The second issue is this wage price spiral that I spoke about earlier. In other words, if workers seek higher wages and are paid higher wages, the price of the goods and services that those workers provide will increase. And then you get this wage price spiral. And that, more than anything else, I guess, is what central banks are most concerned about at the moment. Central banks have argued, as you know, over the last 6 months, that this surge in inflation was transitory. The definition of transitory, number one, is not clear. But number two, it is clear that the transitory is now becoming a lot less transitory. In other words, the length of the transitory period is increasing. And that's what Jerome Powell, more than anything else, was referring to. You know, he's not convinced, obviously, at this stage that the pressures we're seeing at the moment are transitory and that there's a danger they become embedded in the system. And for central bankers, these sorts of inflation levels are truly frightening. You know, 4.9% inflation in the euro area, which is the highest level of inflation since the euro was created in 1999. Inflation is running at 6% in Germany. It's running at 5.1% here in Ireland. So these are, you know, incredibly strong inflation numbers. And for central bankers, this sort of price pressure is total anathema. It's what central bankers are rare to fear, these sorts of surges in inflation. But the problem they have at the moment is, politically and economically, it is difficult to respond to those inflationary pressures in the traditional way, i.e. through increasing interest rates, for a number of reasons. One is that you know, a key part of central bank strategy has been to keep interest rates short and long term down since COVID commenced in order to facilitate the extreme levels of borrowing that governments have had to engage in. So if they start to increase interest rates, short term interest rates, long term interest rates will inevitably rise. And suddenly the cost of funding those big government deficits will start to become much more onerous. So that's not good news. The second issue at the moment is Omicron and the impact that might have, because if we continue to see restrictions being imposed across the world, that will damage global economic activity. But at the same time, it will increase inflationary pressures and supply chain problems. So increasing interest rates in an environment where economic activity is slowing down because of the latest variant of COVID is going to be a very difficult thing for central bankers to actually contemplate. Powell has made it clear that he's already started actually the tapering back of the monthly bond buying program.
Yeah, but what does that mean, Jim? I saw that phrase used and I didn't know what it meant.
Well, but basically a key part of central bank strategy in Europe and the United States and indeed the United Kingdom and Japan since the beginning of this crisis has been bond buying. So in other words, central banks go into the market, they buy government bonds, they force government bond yields down, and that facilitates cheaper borrowing for governments. So they're pumping a lot of money into the system. And, you know, there is an old-fashioned theory that the more money supply you have in the system, the more inflation that will result in.
And there are fears in America. Yeah. I mean, the stock market dipped significantly yesterday after Powell gave his evidence to the Senate Banking Committee. There is a fear, isn't there, that there may be a bubble, not in this case a housing bubble, but a bubble in which people are buying what I just saw described on a very good CNN program on the economy last night. They're buying rubbish and they're paying too much for it.
Yeah, yes, indeed. I'll just get to that point in a second. On the tapering front, what tapering actually means is a winding down of the monthly bond buying program. And already the Federal Reserve is now buying $15 billion less per month in government bonds. So it is reducing its bond buying program. So it's injecting less liquidity into the system. And Powell suggested yesterday that he might speed up that tapering process. So, you know, and that's reflecting his fears about inflation. In terms of, you know, this sort of policy environment is incredibly unusual. It's pretty unprecedented, pumping this sort of liquidity into the system. One of the consequences of all of this liquidity that's been pumped into the system is that we've seen the emergence of significant asset price bubbles. One manifestation of that is property. We think we have a housing crisis in this country, which we do have, but it's a crisis that's evident across many countries at the moment. Secondly, on the equity market front, notwithstanding the bit of nervousness we've seen over the last week as a result of Omicron, equity markets are still at elevated levels. And, you know, it was only a couple of weeks ago that US equity markets reached the highest level on record. So this quantitative easing or bond buying is feeding into that sort of asset price bubble as well. And as we know, as certainly as we should have learned in this country over the last 15 years, once you recognize a bubble, you have to recognize that they are extremely dangerous because inevitably bubbles will burst at some stage. So from a global policymaking perspective at the moment, it is a pretty unprecedented situation. Central bankers really haven't a clue what's happening, how they're going to react to it, because something like COVID-19, you know, has not happened in modern memory. So that's creating significant problems. But it is all storing up all sorts of unintended consequences that could have a profound bearing on global financial markets and indeed the global economy and indeed all of our lives over the next couple of years. The hope is that, you know, we continue to muddle through, but you'd have to think at this juncture that there's a lot of vulnerability and there's a lot of risk in the system. And if you're an investor in that sort of environment, it's certainly not clear where you would go at this stage.
Right. Just a final question, Jim. It seems entirely possible that we will still be in the mode we're in at the moment in 6 months' time. Can we sustain our society as we've known it if this were to last for another 6 months? And some people think, some epidemiologists think, that it might last for two or three more years.
I think the honest answer to that question is, Eamon, that we have no choice. Governments have been very interventionist since March 2020 because they've recognized that in the face of this unprecedented crisis, there was no option other than to spend money to protect households, to protect businesses. And that approach will have to remain in place. Whether we like it or not, governments are going to have to continue to support businesses, support households, because if you withdraw that support, society will fall apart. So governments have a key role to play at the moment in terms of ensuring social stability. And there is no other choice, to be perfectly honest.
Okay, Jim. We're very grateful to, as always, for joining us on Stand. Jim Power is one of our leading economists and has been for a very long time. And I should say that Jim Power and a colleague, Cormac Fitzgerald, who's an accountant, have just published a very interesting book. It's called Smart Tips for SMEs, Understanding the SME Environment in an Irish Context. And that book is in the shops now. And like everything Jim does, fascinating, well-informed as you can possibly be. And it should make a very good read. So we're very grateful to Jim, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.